This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. The crew on board the Lord Plender went straight into action stations. A trawler during peacetime, the 400-ton vessel had been converted into a North Sea patrol ship, armed with guns fore and aft, perfect for escorting convoys off the east coast of Britain. And that foggy afternoon, the 21st of April 1940, they'd spotted something in the murk. Binoculars were passed around. There was definitely something out there. And if that something was what they thought it might be, the ships they were escorting from the Tyne to Orkney could be in grave danger. There was quite a swell that day off Kinnaird Head near Fraserburgh, making it difficult to focus on the speck breaking the surface on their starboard side. A U-boat? There was a good chance, and skipper John Brebner set a course and prepared to engage. If it was a U-boat, it was acting strangely. It made no move to dive and no move to attack. As the Lord Plender closed in, the crew leaning over the gunwales realised it wasn't a German submarine after all. It was a rowing boat. A rowing boat with two men in it, heaving exhaustedly on the oars. How on earth was there a rowing boat this far out? The trawler passed close alongside, taking in the 16-foot craft with its small mast and makeshift sail. "Where have you come from?" called a crewman from the trawler. One of the men in the boat stood up awkwardly, cupped his hands around his mouth, and replied, "We are coming from Norway." The Lord Plender sailed past, turned around, and came back again. "Where did you say you'd come from?" shouted the same man. "I said, we are coming from Norway." The trawler drew alongside, waited for the swell to lift the boat high enough, pulled the two men aboard and took their boat in tow. Down below, they were given two steaming mugs of tea and two glasses of whisky, which is when they began to tell their story. Per Klepsvik was 20 years old and really mightily fed up. He lived on the tiny island of Lindøy, off the southwest coast of Norway, 3 miles long and barely a mile wide. There was just Per, his parents, 5 younger sisters, 4 cows, a horse, a pig, a dozen sheep, and a few hens. A quiet life, a simple life, but a happy life, until the Germans arrived. The south of Norway was quickly overrun, and Per's local authorities surrendered practically at the first opportunity. When local fisherman Johannes Baldersheim arrived on the island, he was so furious at the instant surrender, he complained to the local sheriff that it contravened the Norwegian constitution. Per and Johannes Baldersheim immediately cooked up a plan to escape to Britain and join the war effort from there. Both men vowed not to rest, not for a single day, until the Germans had been chased out of Norway. They talked about maybe stealing a boat, but in the end they opted for Johannes's 16-foot rowing boat, modified for a long crossing, with added cork for buoyancy, a rigged-up mast and sail, 2 pails of drinking water, some tin provisions, and a couple of loaves of bread. They left the island at midnight on the 16th of April 1940, waved off by Per's parents, sisters and the pig. They aimed for Kinnaird Head, 300 long miles away across the dark, cold and notoriously stroppy North Sea in the notoriously windy month of April. At first the sea was calm and the pair made good progress, rowing in a steady rhythm. As dawn broke, they could see the rocky Norwegian shore diminishing behind them, and they could see Heinkels flying overhead, low enough that the insignia on the underside of the wings were horrifyingly visible. Fortunately, the aircraft either didn't see them or showed no interest in what Per called their little nutshell of a boat. For 2 days and two nights, they continued to make good progress, taking it in turns to sleep when they could and letting the sail fill and take the strain when the wind was kind to them. They barely spoke, just breathed in rhythm with the pull of the oars, listening to the gloop and the splash of the water against the hull, squinting up at the sun as it passed over them. It was exhausting work. 300 miles as the crow flew, but you could add on many more to allow for tidal drift. And there was the fear factor too. What were the chances of a U-boat spotting them? Or a mine drifting towards them? Or colliding with some floating debris and piercing the hull? Any kind of mishap, and there was no hope of rescue. As the sky behind them turned from darkness to purple to pink to orange on the third morning, the weather began to change. The light show behind them was one thing. Ahead of them, dark clouds began to boil and mass. A fearsome wind barreled at them out of the northwest, strong enough to render their sail useless. They were heading straight into the storm. The waves lifted and dropped them. Spray lashed their faces. Their feet were in freezing seawater, pooling in the bottom of the boat, with little or no opportunity to bail. A large wave tilted them so steeply their buckets of drinking water tipped over and emptied. The sea spray ruined their bread. Neither of them slept for close on 40 hours. By the fifth morning, April the 21st, they were nearly spent. The wind finally began to drop, and a milky mist wrapped around them, everything turning monochrome on a leaden sea that still rolled heavily in the wake of the storm. The roar of the wind had gone from their ears. The fog deadened everything to silence, except the wash of the water against the boat and the sound of their own breathing. And there, listen. Out of the gloom ahead of them, a new sound. It was distant still, but they sensed its low vibration through the wood of the boat and deep in their heaving chests. A foghorn. The foghorn at Kinnaird Head Lighthouse. For all the gales, for all the steepling seas, for all they risked capsizing at any moment as they fought their way west across the dark water, they had, somehow, remained exactly on their intended course. Everything ached. Everything hurt. Their wet, cold, salty clothes chafed in places they never even knew skin and cloth could even meet. But that sound, it was the most beautiful thing Per and Johannes had ever heard. And then, a couple of hours later, out of the murk, a shape loomed up. A trawler. An armed trawler, one flying the ensign of the British Navy. Their first instinct was to turn down any assistance and complete the journey themselves. But everything ached, everything hurt, and their wet, cold, salty clothes chafed in places they never knew skin and cloth could even meet. When the hands reached down from the Lord Plender, they saw their own raw, calloused hands reaching up to take them. After the tea and whiskey and a change of clothes, Pear and Johannes were taken below to bunks to rest. Pear hurt so much that even breathing sent sharp pain through every muscle, every sinew. Exhausted as he was, every tiny movement was like an electric shock. Exhausted as he was, it still took 3 hours for him to fall asleep. When the convoy arrived at Kirkwall in Orkney, the men were put up in an old people's home, but neither planned on hanging around. Not a single day off until the Germans were out of Norway, they vowed, and not a single day off would they take. Johannes joined the Norwegian merchant service, and Per enrolled in the Free Norwegian Navy, eventually joining the Air Force and rising to the rank of Major. And neither rested for a single day until the Germans were forced out of Norway. That was A Coastal Story. And I'm Charlie Connolly. Now, you might remember a couple of weeks ago I mentioned Evan Stern's incredible Vanishing Postcards podcast, and that you might hear a familiar voice popping up briefly in one episode. Well, that episode is out, and it's a particularly good one and an incredibly moving one among an entire series in which the podcast bar is set very high indeed. And that's despite the presence of my nasal whine in there, even briefly. I'll put a link in the show notes. Until next time, stay safe in the heat if you're listening to this somewhere affected by these astonishing temperatures. Beat the heat by staying hydrated, indulging in the occasional choc ice, and maybe by listening to a few old episodes of Coastal Stories. Like a cool breeze straight off the sea and into your ears. Or something like that. Does it work that way? Look, it won't make you any hotter anyway. Give it a go, at least.